It's a real pleasure to have with me Sourabh Sood, a senior portfolio manager in the fixed income division of T. Rowe Price, with specific expertise in credit markets. As I'm sure many of you know, Sourabh has shared ideas at our online conferences in the past. And Sourabh, I'm very grateful that we can spend a few minutes here talking about the moment we're all living through together and this turbulent period. And I'd love to tap into your expertise in credit markets to help us understand what is going on from where you are sitting.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for the opportunity, John. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I hope you and all the listeners are keeping safe. That's the most important thing, I know, despite the volatility in markets. While most of my thoughts here, I'll give some prepared remarks and we can do some Q&A after that. But most of my thoughts here are my own, but a lot of them have heavily been influenced directly by my colleagues and analysts at T. Rowe Price. So from a credit perspective, the summary bullet from my point is I think there's an incredible opportunity in credit markets at this point. And I've shared this chart in the past, and I'll just talk through that. But the chart basically shows that the percentage of bonds in the U.S. high-yield market trading below 80 cents has gone from a little over 3% at the beginning of the year to a little north of 20% now. This is versus about 17% in February of 2016, 67% in November 2008, and 24% in November 2000, which were all great bargain buying opportunities. In fact, now almost 85% of energy sector bonds in high yield trade below 80 cents, which is just like 2008. Now, there are plenty of high quality credit opportunities that have the potential, in my opinion, to deliver equity-like returns going forward. And let me just talk about that a little bit. Currently, the primary market is pretty much closed to any junk bond issuer, but it is open only to a select few investment-grade rated companies. That too at a very significant concession to where their secondary market bond trading levels are. So market is pretty much closed for a lot of companies. But with even several investment-grade rated bonds trading at a significant discount to par, you will not have to take a lot of risks to generate potential double-digit returns over the next 12 to 24 months in credit markets. That's my opinion. Now, Benjamin Graham defined bargain prices for high-yield bonds or preferred securities as those trading with at least 30% discount to par for a high coupon issue and much lower for lower coupon issue. For example, recently, there were preferred securities of an agency mortgage REIT trading at 50 cents to the dollar amid all the headlines. As a credit investor, thus, you no longer must just be content with the yield of the security, but also have potential for significant capital returns if you've done your credit work correctly. So this market, in my opinion, offers all those opportunities. And no wonder Seth Klarman opened his fund to outside investors for the first time since 2011. I'm gonna pause here to see if you have any questions. Otherwise, I have a few other things to talk about.
On the Klarman point, has he indicated to your knowledge whether he's excited about credit or equity, or do we know any color on why he's opening his fund?
No, not personally. I don't know, but he has been pretty involved in debt in the past, and it's just my inference that he's also looking at these credit markets and getting excited about that.
So there's clearly a lot to look at in the credit space. What are you most excited about?
Yeah, sure. So the most exciting, let me talk about, there are a lot of investment grade companies that are at this point getting downgraded because there's a lot of uncertainty around what will happen to balance sheets or how earnings will look you know, 1 year from now. So I'm spending a lot of time on Fallen Angels, where these get junked, ratings get downgraded to junk. Yet many of these companies have a lot more levers to pull and end up being less risky than generic high-yield rated companies who have much fewer levers to pull. For example, a recently downgraded oil producer has potential to sell some of their chemical business and raise $5 to $10 billion to delever their balance sheet. And, you know, a lot of junk companies do not have such a luxury. So that's one area which, you know, I'm really excited about to look at. The other area I'm excited to look at is, again, high quality issuers, strong balance sheets, strong equity cushions. They have a lot of these preferred securities, which, as you know, Benjamin Graham defined, start trading at discount to par. And it's not just the yield. When they start trading at 50, 60, 70 cents and have the potential to go back to par, you can generate a lot of total return. So those are the two things that I'm really excited about at this time.
Saurabh, we've also heard some arguments that things will get worse before they get better. I mean, we haven't even seen the shakeout happen yet. How do you think about the timing component of this?
No, I think that's a great point. And, you know, we actually have very little insight into what the near-term performance of many companies will look like. In fact, when we talk to a lot of companies, they themselves don't know. And, you know, if someone tells us that they know it, then we push back because this is a very different kind of a crisis. You know, you don't know when things will get back to normal. Now, we can only make guesses as to what short-term earnings and sales would be, but I think that's besides the point. I think the more important thing is that while we don't have short-term visibility, we have greater visibility into intermediate term and can create better context for what a company could be doing on a normalized basis. I mean, this is the whole genesis of what Warren Buffett does, is when he looks at a good business and tries to buy it when something temporarily has gone wrong. In this environment, there are lots of businesses where something hopefully temporarily has gone wrong. And you know, if you can do the normalized earnings analysis, or you can do liquidity or balance sheet or credit work analysis, there are a lot of opportunities to look at. So I think the question is, how do you triangulate onto where you land up, and how do you say no to a lot of different opportunities?
How do you think about, or does it even figure into your analysis, the government response here, the stimulus package, and you know, the size and what it's focused on?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things. The Fed is actually going to be directly buying municipal bonds and investment grade bonds. So what you saw in the middle of March was let me take a step back and let's review on how we got here. So that might be instructive, and then I'll try and answer the question. Just like previous crises, markets hate uncertainty around the path of economic data. So this tends to lead to a process of de-risking as correlations across asset classes either breaks down or go much higher than anticipated. The mechanism of price discovery breaks down overall. Now, markets behave in a discontinuous manner, and it's very difficult to predict what will happen ex ante. This is both a source of frustration for investors and a potential opportunity as genuine and substantial security mispricing occurs. And one example of such a mispricing is recently I looked at a 2-year investment grade rated hotel company bonds that were trading around 80 cents, about a spread of 1,200 basis points. Now, at the same time, credit default swaps of that same company for the same maturity was only costing about 200 basis points. So there was some form of a illiquidity premium that you were getting by owning those bonds as opposed to just what the credit default was getting implied from credit default swaps. Now, how do you think we arrived at this point for the credit markets, which was the breakdown in price discovery? It was somewhat compounded by three things. The number one was rise of corporate leverage broadly over the last 10 years, a lot of which was to fund buybacks and not for productive capital outlays. The second, which is also an important thing, which somewhat we saw what happened in March, was the rise of passive ETFs in credit markets, where the ETFs trade more often than the underlying securities. And then finally, was financial regulation that that basically shrunk the ability of broker dealers to transfer risk efficiently. So now what the Fed is trying to do is address some of these issues, which is the market structure of credit markets, and wherein they're going to be buying municipal bonds and investment grade bonds, or outside of just buying treasuries and agency MBS as well. So that improves, in some sense, the market making mechanism of the, you know, the highest quality of credit spectrum. They also are going to be buying certain highly rated ETFs. So again, you know, they're trying to address a lot of the breakdown in market mechanism that happened, and those are all important things. However, what it does not address, it addresses the liquidity aspect, but what it doesn't address is a lot of businesses were never created for zero revenue over one or two quarters. So we will see a pickup in defaults. And now the fiscal side of it will address certain sectors, certain businesses, such as airlines, for example. But there will be a lot of other businesses, which, you know, never prepared for 6 months of zero revenue and the cost structure is still high. So defaults are still going to pick up. And while all of these things are good to maintain liquidity and solvency in big sectors, it doesn't solve the problem of the entire economy at once. So even though the Chinese economy is coming back up after this shock, it's been a slow grind for them, and I expect for us to see the same thing. So, which goes back to your original question, there might be some volatility along the way, and actual defaults will be picking up. Fiscal addresses some of it, but the size is not nearly enough to address all the solvency issues that we are likely to see because of the pickup in leverage or corporate leverage over the years.
And Saurabh, before I let you go, I'd love to just put this into historical context. You already mentioned 2008 and some other crises. I'm curious, how excited are you now versus back then? And do you believe that the returns will really be quite as good as we saw coming out of the financial crisis?
Yeah. So again, you know, I think so. I think, you know, it is very tough to pick a bottom, and you know, markets could definitely go lower. But when you see bargains on fundamental work that you're doing, they're likely going to be good returns over a long enough time horizon. So, you know, the first thing that everyone talks about is obviously having a long enough time horizon. It's very tough to predict what will happen over the next few weeks, next few months. But I do believe that when high yield spreads overall are currently around 950 basis points, and you know, a functioning economy cannot on average work at these levels of high yield spreads forever. So it basically, A, it is telling you that there will be defaults. B, for a normal functioning environment to revert, these spreads cannot last here forever. So they might go wider, which is what they did in 2008. They went as wide as 1600 or so basis points. But over the last 10 years, this is the widest spreads that we've seen. And back in 2008, the policy response or the Fed response was a little slower. Here you're seeing the Fed respond and the fiscal response coming a lot faster. So I wouldn't expect us to go back to 2008 spread levels. But for context, in during the European sovereign crisis, spreads were at 800 basis points. Back in 2002, spreads were around these levels, and back in 2016, spreads were only around 700 basis points. So it is very attractive. I think it is useful also, although at the same time, not to anchor yourself to prices we saw in recent times. Simply because credit markets are telling you that the cost of capital for a lot of these companies have gone up. Thus, raising new capital will be expensive and tricky. So again, a lot of credit work needs to be done here. So what I'm trying to do is what I'll tell everyone should be doing is go back to your checklist, make sure your process is, you're true to your process, double check stress, liquidity, maturity and balance sheets in this environment. It's a highly volatile environment and range of outcomes will be extremely wide, both to the upside and downside in the short term. But I'm very confident if as a credit investor, you've done the work and you've bought a 70 cent bond of a high quality company where you have high confidence that it'll go back to par eventually, because as I said, these level of spreads on average for an economy are unsustainable that to the size of a US economy, then they are double digit returns potential here.
Great. Well, Saurabh, we'll leave it there. I know you have to run, but I truly appreciate you coming on to share your insights in this turbulent period. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
And I just want to wish you and your family all the very best in this period as well.
Yeah, and to you too. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.